Done. Current rank, iron, 7.09%. Effect, iron. Conjures a crystal rod from which a tether of shimmering force connects to all nearby enemies within a moderate range. Tethered enemies are dragged towards the rod, which is protected by a force field that inflicts moderate resonating force damage to anyone in contact with it. If the force field is ruptured, it explodes in a wave of resonating force damage. If the rod is destroyed or removed from its location, then it explodes in a wave of disruptive force damage. Dimensional displacement, such as teleportation, severs the tether. Untethered enemies who enter within range of the rod become tethered. Only one force tether rod may exist at a time. Shimmering tethers of force shot out to every spider in range, which was almost all of them, given how close Belinda had allowed the mass to encroach on the team. There were so many it seemed less like a series of tethers and more like a wall. All the spiders were plucked from the walls, ceiling, or where they had fallen to the floor, and dragged towards the crystal rod. The constructs were so light and weak that they were all yanked right up to the tip of the rod, piling into a ball at the end of the shaft like the head of a dandelion. The innermost spiders were constantly damaged as they were dragged against the forced field surrounding the crystal rod. Not every one of the spiders had fallen within the range of the bolstered tether, but it was the significant majority. Belinda followed up with another power. Ability: Pit of the Reaper. Trap: Conjuration. Dimension: Cost: High mana. Cooldown: 2 minutes. Current rank: Iron, 6, 14%. Effect: Iron. Conjures a dimensional space pit on any horizontal surface. The surface does not need to be solid or supportive. Anyone inside the pit suffers ongoing necrotic damage. If this spell is cast again while a pit already exists, the existing pit vanishes, depositing anyone inside upon the surface on which the pit was conjured. The rod fell into the pit that opened up underneath them, dragging the spiders down. As it had been moved from its original location, the rod detonated. The force field around the crystal rod blew up first, then the rod itself shortly after, both blasting the spiders with force and crushing them against the sides of the dimensional pit. Some were launched back up and out of the pit, although they landed inert and unmoving. The team moved to clean up the spider constructs that had escaped the tether pit combination, clearing out the rest with wand, staff, sword, and in Sophie's case, boot. It wasn't long before everything was done. The pit vanished, and the destroyed construct remnants were disgorged from the vanishing pit and into a pile. "Does anyone else feel like that was a bit anticlimactic after all that talk?" Neil asked, and Jason immediately let out a groan. "Why in the world would you go and say something like that?" Jason asked. "What?" Neil asked in turn. Suddenly, there was a grinding sound as large sections of the floor started to descend, leaving large holes. "That's what," Jason said. "I think they would have opened, whether I said anything or not," Neil said. "Well, now we'll never know." Chapter 43. Stalwart. The spider constructs had appeared from holes that had opened in the walls and ceiling. This time it was the floor that opened up. 6 large, evenly spaced but much larger holes, appearing in a straight line down the length of the cell block. The team didn't wait for whatever was within to emerge, springing straight into action.
"I'll take the first, you the second,"
Clive said to Belinda, and they both quickly chanted out their rune trap spell.
"In place, the mark of power."
Runes appeared on the floor, in front of the first and second holes. They glowed brightly for a brief moment before vanishing. As they cast their spells, Humphrey vaulted into the air, a pair of dragon wings appearing on his back and pushing him upwards.
Ability: Dragon Wings. Wing. Conjuration: Movement. Cost: High mana per second. Cooldown: None. Current rank: Bronze, 0.01%. Effect: Iron. Manifest wings that are powerful but lack agility. Effect: Bronze. The strength and resilience of the wings is increased, allowing them to be used for crude attacks to the sides and rear. The wings have strong damage resistance and very strong fire resistance. Ongoing mana cost is reduced from very high to high.
Humphrey alighted on the upper mezzanine level, letting the mana-hungry wings vanish again. Sophie sauntered forward, ready to meet whatever emerged, while Jason vanished into the shadows.
Neil had been hastily pouring salt from a small sack to make a circle. He knelt briefly and touched a finger to the circle when it was done. The salt crystals sparkled like flecks of diamond in the sun before a dervish of crystal appeared above the circle, swiftly cohering into the shape of Neil's summon.
Ability: Chrysalis Golem. Growth: Summoning. Cost: Very high mana. Cooldown: 6 hours. Current rank: Iron 9, 97%. Effect: Iron. Summons a Chrysalis Golem.
The golem was a large humanoid edifice of translucent crystal, half as tall again as its summoner. Neil gestured it forward, where it positioned itself between the team's support contingent and the holes from which the enemy was about to emerge. From each hole, a single figure rose from below, like Neil's golem. They were constructs, ascending on platforms that sealed the holes from which they came. They also shared the golem's intimidating size, but not its humanoid appearance. These new constructs had a body that was a vertical cylinder of plain dark stone. From the base, four legs held it up, built for stability over speed. Equidistant at cardinal points around the middle of the cylinder were long inhuman arms. Each arm was segmented with a pair of elbows that allowed it to move in uncanny gestures. The arms ended in blunted, four-fingered claws. Atop each cylinder, in place of a head, was a stone bowl. As the constructs rose, spheres of magical force manifested into each bowl, shimmering like soap bubbles, and the constructs began to move. Like all constructs, they didn't have a soul, and their auras were the meager product of the magic animating them. It was enough to let the team know their opponents were somewhere in the mid-range of bronze rank power. The two sides moved on each other before the platforms bringing the constructs up had even completed their task. Sophie was the quickest, ignoring the first two constructs to go after the third, rapidly hammering attacks into the joints of its arms. The movement of the arms was quick and tricky, but Sophie's reflexes were up to the task. As it continued to rise up, she went after the leg joints as well. The effectiveness of her attacks was limited, but the resonating force damage of her special ability did succeed in chipping away at the hard stone of the leg.
Ability: Immortal Fist, Mystic. Special ability: Cost: None. Cooldown: None. Current rank: Iron 8, 21%. Effect: Iron. Unarmed attacks deal additional resonating force damage, which is highly effective against physical defenses. Suffer no damage from making unarmed strikes against objects and negate all damage from actively intercepted attacks. Not all damage from very powerful or higher ranked attacks will be negated.
The two constructs she had passed stepped over the edge of their holes before the platforms they rode reached the level of the floor to seal them. They moved towards the main group, walking over the now invisible runes, which detonated as they did so. The explosions were not enough to knock the heavy creatures over, but they caused enough damage to make cracks appear in their legs. This was most true of the closest construct, which had walked over Clive's trap. It suffered the full effect of the bronze rank power, then the secondary explosion afterward.
Ability: Rune Trap. Rune. Spell. Cost: High mana. Cooldown: 1 minute. Current rank: Bronze 0.03%. Effect: Iron. Create an explosive rune that will disappear after a short period. The rune can be set to trigger by proximity, caster trigger, or both. Effect: Bronze. Enemies affected by the rune trap will be the source of a secondary explosion after a brief period.
The second construct was not much more than briefly staggered by Belinda's trap, but Humphrey made the most of the immobile target. He plummeted down like a meteor, stacking up powers into a single, potent attack. He started by invoking one of his racial gifts.
Ability: Dragon Blood. Transfigured from Human. Ability: Essence Gift. Power and Spirit attributes are enhanced for moderate mana per second.
His dragon wings appeared once again as he plunged from above, driving him forcefully towards his target below.
Ability: Dive Bomb. Wing. Special attack: Movement. Combination. Cost: High stamina. Cooldown: 20 seconds. Current rank: Bronze 0.02%. Effect: Iron. Accelerate down to attack a target from above. Can be combined with normal or special melee attacks. Physical damage from these attacks is increased. No falling damage is suffered when using this ability, even if the attack misses. Effect, bronze. A resonating force shockwave is produced from the impact point. Another of Humphrey's racial gifts further enhanced the power of his attack. Ability, wing raider. Transfigured from human, ability, essence gift. Speed, momentum, and damage of movement type special attacks is increased. Heavy conjured weapons and armor do not increase stamina consumption, regardless of weight, and do not impede movement abilities. Light conjured weapons have increased weight and momentum without being heavier to wield, counting as heavy weapons for the purposes of special attack requirements. Dive bomb would do damage alone, but as it was a combination special attack, Humphrey added another power that would be especially effective against the construct. Ability, Shieldbreaker, Might. Shieldbreaker, Might, special attack. Cost, low mana, moderate stamina. Cooldown, 10 seconds. Current rank, bronze, 0.04%. Effect, iron. Inflicts additional resonating force damage, highly effective against physical defenses. Requires a heavy weapon. Effect, bronze. Damage to rigid material is significantly increased. As Humphrey plunged through the air, the sphere that had formed in the monster's strange bowl head floated up to intercept him. It grew as it moved into his path, large enough to engulf his whole body. Humphrey passed through the sphere, which popped like the soap bubble it resembled. It had not so much as slowed him down. You have been trapped in Sphere of Incarceration. Sphere of Incarceration has triggered ability Unstoppable. Sphere of Incarceration has been destroyed. In a team full of unconventional members, it was easy to overlook Humphrey and his powers that were as straightforward as Humphrey himself. What he brought to the team was something that they otherwise lacked: simple, reliable power. When Humphrey Geller wanted to attack you, you would be attacked. Ability, Unstoppable. Transfigured from human, ability, essence gift. Movement abilities cannot be negated or impaired. Resonating force damage and disruptive force damage are imparted to any obstructing object. Increased for each movement ability and special attack in effect. This is a movement effect. Humphrey came down on the construct like the United States military on an oil-rich nation. His assault from above was domineering, overwhelming, and inflicted a level of widespread damage that went way beyond his expectations. The initial strike smashed right through the stone bowl and buried itself deep in the cylindrical body. The construct was riddled with cracks and half destroyed, a job finished by the dive bomb attack's secondary shockwave. It freed Humphrey's sword as the construct was blasted into shrapnel. As Humphrey destroyed the second construct, Sophie continued to tie up the third. It tried to catch her with its own sphere, but her speed and mobility powers allowed her to nimbly avoid it, even as her attacks continued unabated. The closest she came to being caught was when she looked back as fragments of the construct behind her explosively showered her with shrapnel. One of her construct's legs gave out beneath her unrelenting attacks, but it continued to fight back with the lengthy, multi-jointed arms that tried to slam her into the floor. Some attacks she blocked, others she neatly sidestepped, all the while continuing her own assault. She more than held her own against her bronze rank enemy, but it remained a dangerous opponent. She was all too aware that getting caught up fighting just one meant she was not protecting the team from the others. Sophie and Humphrey had left one construct between them and the bulk of the team, which was intercepted by Neil Summon. Although the two constructs were of a similar size, the bronze rank enemy quickly began to overpower the summon. It started by using two of its four clawed hands to grab the chrysalis golem's arms, holding them out of the way as a third claw hammered away on the golem's crystalline body. With each blow, a new rune appeared on the myriad facets of the chrysalis golem, even as it struggled ineffectually. While this was going on, Neil watched in silence, primed to throw out any necessary shields and healing for his teammates. Belinda was likewise actively prepared to support the team as needed. Clive, in contrast, was drawing a ritual circle at the end of his staff, lines of golden light appearing at a wave of his finger. Ability, enact ritual, rune. Special ability, cost, varies. Cooldown, none. Current rank, bronze, 0.09%. Effect, iron. Manifest lines of magic to draw out ritual diagrams. Materials required for a ritual may be used directly from a dimensional storage space instead of being placed within the diagram. Effect, bronze. Create simple ritual diagrams to alter the parameters of magical items. Quickly completed, the ritual circle floated in the air, affixed by an invisible force to the end of his staff.
You have altered the effect of Spell Lance of the Magister. Damage has been altered from disruptive force to resonating force.
The disruptive force of his staff attacks were highly effective against magic and adequate for most enemies, but would suffer against the hard and tough bodies of the constructs. The time it cost him to alter his weapons would be made up for in the effectiveness of their new temporary damage type. He left his wand unchanged, however, as he was wary of the magic spheres the constructs each had. His senses could make out their magical nature, which his wand's original damage would be effective against. As the construct continued to hammer away at the chrysalis golem, its sphere floated out to hover over the golem's head. The construct's final arm rose from behind its main body to touch the sphere, which started to vibrate and glow. Clive immediately directed the beam of his wand to lock onto the sphere, while his staff repeatedly fired bolts into the construct's body. The magical bolts exploded on contact, also affecting the chrysalis golem. The damage caused new runes to form on the golem's body. The sphere above the golem continued to grow, but the disruptive power of the wand slowed that growth to a crawl. At the far end of the cell, the distance from the rest of the team and the glowstones they carried made the shadowy darkness a playground for Jason. He danced among the last three constructs, an elusive, flickering shadow. The disadvantage was that his only viable source of damage was his sword, which would take time to build up enough power to be an effective threat.
Item: Dread Salvation, Iron Rank, Growth, Legendary. A sword crafted with gratitude, in hope it would be of the greatest use in the moment of greatest need. It was forged with passion and expertise to be a reliable companion, bestowing upon it an incredible potential. Weapon, sword. Effect: If a special attack that applies an affliction is made with this sword, but the subject of the attack has a physical immunity to it, an instance of Stonecutter is applied to the blade. Effect: If a special attack that applies an affliction is made with this sword, but the subject of the attack has a magical immunity to it, an instance of Spellbreaker is applied to the blade. Stonecutter, magic, stacking: All attacks deal additional resonating force damage, highly effective against physical defenses. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Spellbreaker, magic, stacking: All attacks deal additional disruptive force damage, highly effective against magical defenses and incorporeal entities. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Jason moved amongst the constructs like a spirit, doing all he could to hold their attention with his minimal damage. The more he could distract the back half of the enemies, the quicker his allies would deal with the front and move to assist him. Special attack: Punish has inflicted Sin and Price of Absolution on Tartarian Golem. Tartarian Golem is immune to Sin. Sin does not take effect. Affliction immunity has triggered an effect on weapon Dread Salvation. Weapon Dread Salvation has gained an instance of Stonecutter. Tartarian Golem is immune to Price of Absolution. Price of Absolution does not take effect. Affliction immunity has triggered an effect on weapon Dread Salvation. Weapon Dread Salvation has gained an instance of Stonecutter.
Until his allies could join more to help, Jason had the assistance of Gordon, whose beam attacks proved more attention-getting than Jason. One beam was disruptive force, which weakened and eventually broke the magical spheres, forcing the constructs to form new ones. The other beam was resonating force, an effective weapon against the rigid stone bodies of the constructs. Shade had informed Jason that the constructs almost certainly relied on purely magical senses, lacking the sensory organs of a living creature. As Jason had little need of Shade's shadow bodies in the darkened area, Shade posited that he might be able to hide Jason from their senses entirely. For each of Shade's bodies subsumed into Jason's shadow, he could mask an aspect of Jason's presence, such as heat or sound. It apparently also extended to more unusual senses. Jason declined, however, as he needed to hold the construct's attention. Their spheres moved around and their arms lashed out, striking nothing but hard floor and empty air. Jason may not have been Sophie's equal, but he had the skills imprinted on him by skill books and consolidated with a year of training and experience. He had become formidable in his own right.
The three constructs became two, as Humphrey moved past Sophie and started hammering on one of them, diverting its attention. He started with the strongest of his special attacks, which rocked the construct back in spite of its great weight. Ability: unstoppable force, might, special attack, cost, high mana, extreme stamina, cooldown, 1 minute. Current rank, bronze, 0.07%. Effect, iron. Melee attack with massive momentum, dealing large amounts of additional resonating force and disruptive force damage. Requires a heavy weapon. Effect, bronze. For each enemy struck, the cooldown of this ability and the cost of the next use of this ability are reduced. Having spent week after week of almost hourly battles, the team was quick to pick up on one another's rhythms. Belinda was at the ready and immediately reset Humphrey's attack. Ability, Blessing of Readiness, Adept. Special ability, Recovery. Base cost, moderate mana. Cooldown, varies. Current rank, iron, 8, 14%. Effect, iron. This spell can only affect an ally and not yourself. The cooldown of the next ability used by the target is reduced by up to 1 minute. The cooldown of this ability is equal to the time taken from the cooldown of the target ability. Using her magical tattoo, Belinda ended the cooldown on her power, allowing it to reset Humphrey's attack a second time. Jason was almost caught in the sphere as he watched boggle-eyed as Humphrey pushed around the giant stone monstrosity as if it were a small child. Humphrey finished the construct off with a shield breaker attack, the specialty resonating force power inflicting even more damage than his unstoppable force attack. Sophie, in the meantime, had neatly disassembled her opponent. Where Humphrey left nothing but ruined chunks, Sophie had taken her golem apart joint by joint and then smashed the bowl, causing the sphere she had been dodging to wink out and not return. "Sophie!" Neil called out, and she turned to look. The sphere of the first construct had finally grown large enough to encapsulate Neil's golem, which was suddenly covered in a crystal cocoon within the sphere. Trapped in the sphere and entered into its inert chrysalis state, the golem was no longer any kind of protector for Belinda, Neil, and Clive. Belinda stepped up to buy the time the team needed. With her power-resetting abilities expended, Belinda knew it was time to change roles. She started by summoning a suit of heavy armor, plus a hammer and shield, which blinked into existence on her person. Ability, Bag of Tricks, Magic. Special ability, Dimension. Cost, none. Cooldown, none. Current rank, iron, 8, 0.8%. Effect, iron. You have a personal, dimensional storage space. You may equip any item in your storage space directly onto your person or unequip anything on your person directly to your storage space. She activated another power that made her grow taller and bulk out with muscle, her clothes and equipment growing with her. Ability, Counterfeit Combatant, Charlatan. Special ability, Boon. Cost, high mana. Cooldown, 1 minute. Current rank, iron, 4, 74%. Effect, iron. Gain a significant increase to the power attribute and temporary proficiency with armor and melee weaponry. Your physique enlarges with equipment shifting to match. As prepared as she could be, she squared her shoulders and moved to intercept the construct. She was only an iron rank combatant, however, and a makeshift one at that. This became painfully obvious as she was rapidly pushed back, overwhelmed by the construct's multiple irregular attacks. Her only saving grace was that the construct's sphere was still occupied containing the chrysalis golem, the construct apparently unaware that the golem was in an inert state. Sophie appeared, moving through the room like a breeze. She took over from a grateful Belinda, who had suffered something of a beating from the many-armed construct. The shields and healing supplied by Neil had been the only thing that let her hold up against the higher-rank enemy, even for the short time she had managed. At the other end of the cell block, Humphrey moved on one of the now two remaining constructs. They were now ignoring Jason, in spite of the growing power of his sword, rightly recognizing the larger threat. Humphrey could not take the two constructs down as quickly as the first two, needing to wait for his most potent abilities to come off cooldown. His shieldbreaker attack, fortunately, had a short cooldown made all the shorter by Belinda's aura. Ability, Masterful, Adept. Aura, Recovery. Base cost, none. Cooldown, none. Current rank, iron, 7, 55%. Effect, iron. Abilities of allies within the aura come off cooldown more quickly. In between hits with his big-ticket attack, Humphrey fought using another of his special attacks. The human aptitude for special attacks had caused him to awaken an array of them, contributing to his potent offensive capability. Ability: Relentless Assault, Might. Special Attack: Cost, Low Stamina, increasing with each successive attack. Cooldown: None. Current Rank: Bronze, 0.02%. Effect: Iron. Each use of this attack in quick succession increases the damage of this attack. Damage is of the same type caused by a normal attack. Effect: Bronze. After a threshold of successive attacks is reached, escalating resonating force damage is dealt with each attack. Even this backup attack of Humphrey's started putting pay to the construct he was fighting in relatively short order. He finished it with a shield breaker attack and moved on to the next construct as Jason realized that his contribution to the fight really would be minimal. As he and Humphrey engaged the last construct at the back, the remaining one at the front was now squaring off against Sophie. Clive's staff had left it pocked with damage, and Sophie was doing the same, but it was the awakening of Neil's golem that signaled the end of that fight. The golem emerged explosively from its chrysalis. Shards of razor-sharp crystal shot out wildly, shredding the sphere containing the golem. Revealed in the wake of the detonated cocoon, the golem was leaner than it had been before, now with four arms, like that of its opponent, although more traditionally placed, two to each side of the golem's body. With the disappearance of its first glowing sphere, the construct created another in its bowl, which then floated towards the newly reformed golem. The golem hammered the sphere with a fist, and the bubble not only burst, but blasted force back at its creator. As the construct was rocked back on its legs, the golem, more agile than before, moved in smoothly to start hammering away with its fists. The crude, blunt appendages vibrated as they struck, sending shockwaves through the enemy construct. The new and improved Chrysalis Golem took out its enemy almost as quickly as Humphrey, who was finishing the last of the constructs in the back. The team regrouped in the middle of the cell block. Clive and Neil enthusiastically told Jason and Humphrey about Belinda's stalwart efforts in buying time for Sophie to come to their aid. "Still," Neil said, "not as bad as we thought in the end."
"Seriously?" Jason asked. "You're doing it again?"
"The bad thing already came out," Neil said.
"What are the odds of there being another—"
He trailed off as the cell block filled with the sound of grinding stone. Chapter 44. I'm sick of fighting magic rocks. The now familiar sound of grinding stone echoed through the cell block. The first time it had been small holes in the walls and ceiling, the second large holes in the floor. The group looked around for the new source of the grating noise.
"It's coming from the cells," Humphrey said. "All the cells."
The team looked through the rusty bars and spotted apertures that had appeared in the floor behind them.
"How many cells are there?"
Sophie asked.
12 cells to a side per level, 2 levels to each side," Belinda said. "Almost 50 all up."
"How can stuff rise up from the floors of the upper cells?" Neil asked. "They just come from the one below, right?"
"Dimensional spaces," Belinda said. "Like the powers you and I got from the Reaper Stones, Neil."
In each cell, a large glass box rose up from the floor. All of them were filled with a sickly yellow fog, from which the team could sense the auras within, currently in a dormant state.
"Those are bronze rank auras," Sophie said. "Are we ready for that?"
"We have to be," Humphrey said. "So, yes." Blood-red light shone over their feet. They turned to see it was shining under the large doors they had used to trigger the room's defences in the first place. It seemed to be a trigger for whatever was inside the glass cases as the team felt the auras within them surge into wakefulness.
"Time to even out the numbers a little," Humphrey said,
producing a bag of chalk dust and hurriedly pouring out a circle. He took out his summoner's die and rolled it on the floor, the face-up rune glowing as it came to a stop.
"Oh no," Humphrey said, as 5 large fish made of carved bone were summoned into being and started flopping helplessly on the floor.
"The fish again?" Jason said. "Maybe you shouldn't be rolling the dice on the important fights, literally and figuratively."
"It's a 1 in 12 chance," Humphrey said.
Rather than have his helpless summons underfoot, he dismissed them and they vanished.
Neil's summon was still present, the crystalline golem maintaining its more advanced post-chrysalis form. Leaner and more agile than its basic shape, it had four arms ending in fists capable of powerful vibration attacks.
"Do we go smash those glass cases?" Neil asked. "We'd have to kick our way through the bars, right?"
"I suspect whatever is in there will come to us," Jason said. "If you want to go into a prison cell where some unknown creature is about to burst out, though, be my guest. Actually, you're the healer. You have to stay here." The sound of shattering glass signaled that their thus far unknown enemies were about to make an appearance. The sickly-looking smoke that had been in the glass boxes came pouring out through the cell bars. The volume of it suggested that either the fog had been incredibly compressed in the glass cases, or it was being continuously fed through wherever the glass cases had arisen from. It obscured the team's vision of the cell interiors as they heard the bars start to swing open with reluctant, rusty shrieks. The creatures that emerged from the smoke were roughly humanoid, broad, heavy, and hairless, with dark, scaly skin. Their arms were longer and more powerful than their legs, ending in thick, three-fingered hands. They had tiny, sunken eyes and nostrils in flat, noseless faces. Their wide mouths were filled with misshapen teeth, like fragments of shattered yellow stone. They pushed their way through cell doors barely large enough to fit them.
"They don't look weak," Neil said.
The smoke thinned as it moved into the room ahead of the creatures, filling the cell block with an unpleasant haze.
"Poison cloud has inflicted you with Breath of Tartarus. You have resisted Breath of Tartarus. You have gained an instance of resistant. You have gained an instance of integrity."
Jason looked to his companions with concern. They were more vulnerable than he was, not sharing the power to grow stronger from afflictions.
"Ability, Sin Eater, Sin. Special ability, Recovery, Holy. Cost, none. Cooldown, none. Current rank, Bronze, 0.00%. Effect, Iron. Increased resistance to afflictions. Gain an instance of Resistant each time you resist an affliction or cleanse an affliction using Essence abilities. Effect, Bronze. Gain an instance of Integrity for each affliction you resist or remove using Essence abilities. Resistant, Boon, Holy, Stacking. Resistance to afflictions is increased. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Consume to negate instances of Vulnerable on a one-to-one basis. Integrity, Heal over time, Mana over time, Stamina over time, Holy, Stacking. Periodically recover a small amount of health, stamina, and mana. Additional instances have a cumulative effect.
The rest of the team were not completely vulnerable, with Sophie and Jason's auras both shielding them.
Ability, Cleansing Breeze, Swift, Aura, Holy, Cleanse. Cost, none. Cooldown, none. Current rank, Bronze, 0.00%. Effect, Iron. Allies within the aura have increased resistance to curses, diseases, magic, afflictions, poisons, and unholy afflictions. This is a holy effect. Negates poisons in the air. This is a cleanse effect. Effect, Bronze. Allies within the aura are periodically cleansed of curses, diseases, magic afflictions, poisons, and unholy afflictions. Mana and stamina recovery effects on allies have greater effect.
Cleansing Breeze was one of the precious few powers that had reached Bronze for Sophie, accelerated by a preponderance of poisonous monsters in the city. Thorny plant monsters, spitting frog monsters, snake monsters. The team had a good amount of cleansing between them, which made such creatures easy pickings, as well as helping them accelerate the advancement of those powers. In the case of Sophie's aura, it would slowly but surely cleanse many types of affliction from her allies. It was already purifying the fog around them, and, added to Jason's aura, left the team in relatively good stead.
Ability, Hegemony, Sin. Aura, Holy, Unholy. Base cost, none. Cooldown, none. Current rank, Bronze, 0.00%. Effect, Iron. Allies within the aura have increased resistance to afflictions, while enemies within the aura have their resistance to afflictions reduced. Enemy resistances are further reduced for each instance of Sin they are suffering from. Effect, Bronze, inflicts an instance of Sin on enemies that make physical or magical attacks against allies within the aura. Instances applied in this way cannot be resisted.
Belinda, Sophie, and Neil suffer the worst, their iron rank constitutions struggling against the poison, even with the powers bolstering their resistance. Jason clasped a hand on Neil's shoulder.
Feed me your sins.
Red life force emerged from Neil, tainted by the same color as the mist. The taint disappeared into Jason's hand, leaving Neil looking relieved as his now healthy life force returned to his body. Ability, Feast of Absolution, Sin, Spell, Recovery, Cleanse, Holy. Base cost, low mana, cooldown, none. Current rank, bronze, 0.00%. Effect, iron. Cleanse all curses, diseases, poisons, and unholy afflictions from a single target. Additionally, cleanse all holy afflictions if the target is an ally. Recover stamina and mana for each affliction cleansed. This ability ignores any effect that prevents cleansing. Cannot target self. Effect, bronze. Enemies suffer an instance each of penance and legacy of sin for each condition cleansed from them. Penance, affliction, holy, damage over time, stacking. Deals ongoing transcendent damage. Additional instances have a cumulative effect, dropping off as damage is dealt. Legacy of sin, affliction, holy, stacking. You are considered more damaged for the purposes of execute ability damage scaling. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. While this was going on, some of the monsters had already moved into the attack. The team had their backs to the large doors, so the monsters wouldn't be able to flank them, although they would be able to drop down from above. While Sophie stepped forward with Neil's golem to hold off the first wave of attackers, Humphrey vaulted up to the mezzanine on their left with a flap of conjured dragon wings. Humphrey engaged with one of the creatures that had been about to drop down to the ground floor. Its lengthy arms gave it reach, and the knobbly scales running along them made those arms as tough as any weapon. The monster may not have been a match for Humphrey, but it was still disconcertingly strong and tough, given how many they knew to be gathering, unseen in the poison haze. Jason used his magic boots to leap up to the mezzanine on the other side, likewise engaging a monster. He inflicted a rapid series of slashes, the creature's reach no match for that of Jason's shadowy arm. Ability, Hand of the Reaper, Dark, Conjuration, Disease, Unholy, Cost, Low mana per second, cooldown, none. Current rank, bronze, 0.00%. Effect, iron. Conjure a highly flexible, semi-substantial shadow arm that can extend or shrink. Conjured items can be conjured into the shadow hand. Can be used to make melee special attacks. Special attacks made using the arm inflict creeping death, in addition to other effects. Effect, bronze. You can conjure a second arm. Special attacks made using the arms inflict rigor mortis, in addition to other effects. Creeping death. Damage over time. Disease, stacking. Inflicts ongoing necrotic damage until the disease is cleansed. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Rigor mortis. Affliction, unholy, stacking. Penalty to the speed and recovery attributes. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Each time a new instance is inflicted, deals necrotic damage for each existing instance. Jason's dagger barely drew blood from the scaly skin, but all Jason needed were shallow cuts. With just a few slashes, more than a dozen afflictions were loaded onto the monster. Jason's conjured dagger was the source of many of the afflictions, but not all of them, such as the special attack he was using. Ability, Punish, Sin, Special Attack, Melee, Curse, Holy. Cost, low mana, cooldown, none. Current rank, bronze, 0.00%. Effect, iron. Inflicts necrotic damage and the sin affliction. Effect, bronze. Inflicts or refreshes the duration of Price of Absolution. Sin, affliction, curse, stacking. All necrotic damage taken is increased. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Price of Absolution, affliction, holy. Suffer transcendent damage for each instance of sin cleansed from you. Neither Jason nor the creature were going to wait for the afflictions to slowly devour it. It lunged at Jason, although its relatively short legs and the afflictions it already suffered from made it a little slow. Jason easily stepped into one of Shade's bodies and out from another that had slipped past the creature while it was engaged with Jason, giving him plenty of time to cast a quick spell before the creature turned around to face him again.
Suffer the cost of your transgressions.
Ability, Punition, Doom, Spell. Cost, moderate mana. Cooldown,
30 seconds. Current rank, bronze, 0.00%. Effect, iron. Inflicts necrotic damage for each curse, disease, poison, and unholy affliction the target is suffering. Effect, bronze. Inflicts or refreshes the duration of penitence. Penitence, affliction, holy. Gain an instance of penance for each curse, disease, poison, or unholy effect that is cleansed from you. This is a holy effect. Penance, affliction, holy, damage over time, stacking, deals ongoing transcendent damage. Additional instances have a cumulative effect, dropping off as damage is dealt.
The creature staggered as its muscles withered with necrosis, even as its wounds glowed with the transcendent damage, starting to ravage it from the inside out. It lunged at Jason again, with no more effect. Jason was easily able to move from one of Shade's bodies to the other, like a bully playing keep away. He cast another spell.
Feed me your sins.
The creature's life force became visible, tainted with the storm of affliction within it. Ugly curses, poisons, and other horrors Jason inflicted swirled about with the shining transcendence of holy afflictions until they were drained out, siphoned off into Jason's outstretched hand. Even more of the holy afflictions were left in their place as the creature's life force once again became unseen.
18 afflictions have been cleansed from Tartarian Brute. 36 instances of penance have been inflicted on Tartarian Brute. 18 instances of Legacy of Sin have been inflicted on Tartarian Brute. Your mana and stamina have been replenished. Stamina and mana cannot exceed normal maximum values. Excess stamina and mana are lost.
The brute stumbled to a halt as the transcendent damage devastated its body, lighting it up from the inside like some divine being alighted upon the earth. Jason tilted his head as he watched the creature, one of the few he had encountered capable of surviving this far into his ability sequence. He chanted the incantation for the coup de grace.
Mine is the judgment, and the judgment is death.
Ability, verdict, doom. Spell, execute. Cost, moderate mana. Cooldown, 30 seconds. Current rank, bronze, 0.00%. Effect, iron. Deals a small amount of transcendent damage. As an execute effect, damage scales exponentially with the enemy's level of injury. Effect, bronze. Base damage is increased for each instance of penance on the target.
The penance afflictions on the creature increased the base damage of the execute power, while the legacy of sin affliction made the damage escalation ramp up much faster. The multiplicative effect of the two affliction stacks made for a shower of transcendent light that left behind not so much as a drop of blood. Jason had never killed something that tough that quickly, but of course Humphrey had already finished his first and was making short work of a second. Another brute came lumbering out of the poison fog, and Jason just raised his hand. Blood seeped from his palm for a short moment, after which a torrent of leeches came spraying out over the creature. Jason paid it no more attention and leapt from his side of the room over the gap to Humphrey on the opposite mezzanine.
"Can you destroy these upper levels at this end, so the creatures can't drop down on the team?"
Jason asked, as Humphrey kicked a dead brute off his sword. Humphrey gave the brick floor beneath them an assessing glance.
"Yeah, you want to go back to the wall and let them come to us?"
"No, but we can't have them fall on our heads either," Jason said. "You keep the others safe while Neil and Sophie hold the poison at bay."
"And what about the room full of monsters and poison gas?"
Shade emerged from Jason's shadow, as Gordon manifested with a surge of his aura. Jason glanced across at Colin, now bound up in his bloody cloth humanoid shape.
"I'm sick of fighting magic rocks," Jason said.
"You can leave this lot to us."
Sophie's aura was thinning out the gas in the area immediately surrounding the team and would soon have it cleansed entirely. Humphrey had used his shieldbreaker attack to shatter the mezzanine at their end of the room, so the creatures were only able to come at them at ground level from one direction. Sophie, Humphrey, and Neil's golem beat them back, assisted by Clive and his magical weapons. Neil watched over the whole group, but made sure to keep a careful eye on Belinda, who was suffering the most from the gas not yet fully cleared out. Whenever it started to get the best of her, he would purge it from her with a spell.
Ability, clean slate. Prosperity. Spell, cleanse. Heal over time, holy. Cost, moderate mana. Cooldown,
30 seconds. Current rank, bronze, 0.00%. Effect, iron. Negates boons on a willing subject. Cleanse target of afflictions of all types except wounding. The base strength of the cleanse effect is enhanced for each boon negated. Effect, bronze. Target gains a heal over time effect that has additional effectiveness against wounding afflictions. The strength of the healing effect is increased for each boon negated.
From the haze of poison fog, the team saw flashes of transcendent light and heard horrifying screams. They could only assume they came from the creatures, because it definitely wasn't Jason's voice, although none of the creatures Humphrey and Sophie cut down had made so much as a grunt as they died. At first, the brutes surged in on them, but slowly their numbers petered out. Finally, the last one to appear was in such a miserable state of decomposition that it looked like a zombie, complete with staggering shamble as it emerged from the fog before falling onto what was left of its face. A bloody strip of cloth snaked out of the fog, wrapping around its leg and dragging it back out of sight. The next thing to come out of the fog were four cloaked figures. Jason, flanked by his familiars. He looked the team over, nodded as he saw they were fine, and his gaze turned to the large doors behind them. What say we see what's back there? Chapter 45. Crossing the Threshold. The team waited for the sound of grinding stone that would signal another wave of combat, but the room was as silent as Neil under Jason's baleful glare.
I think we're clear, Humphrey said, finally.
The team stopped to rest in the zone of clean air Sophie's power had finished clearing out, while the poison mist in the rest of the room slowly dispersed. As the haze disappeared, it revealed a horror show of dead creatures piled around the broken remains of the constructs they had destroyed earlier. Neil tried looting the enemies, but while the constructs yielded a few crafting materials, the creatures yielded nothing. They also didn't disappear into rainbow smoke, indicating them to not be monsters, but real creatures.
These things have been sealed away for who knows how long, Neil said. Kind of like those priests that Jason let loose.
My interface called them Tartarian brutes, Jason said. The constructs were Tartarian golems. Does that mean something to anyone? All eyes turned to Clive, who shook his head. In my world, Jason said, there's a myth about a realm called Tartarus. It's a prison realm.
We do seem to be in a prison, Belinda said. It makes me curious about what's behind these doors.
While Neil looted, Clive had been examining the doors. He drew magic diagrams on them and golden lines with his ritual power. Jason noted that, unlike the attempts of the adventurers that came before, they were being placed in the middle of the doors rather than around the locks.
You're not trying to crack the locks? He asked Clive.
Those are a decoy, Clive said. A key tip for ritual magic, and life, really, is to not do the same thing as the people who died trying. Also, a twin circle ritual is a very bad idea if you don't know what you're doing.
Clive completed the ritual, the two magical circles lighting up on the door. The red light shining from underneath faded away, and there was a pair of audible clicks from the locks. Clive dismissed his glowing ritual circles with a wave of his hands and pushed on the doors, swinging them open. Beyond was a circular chamber with a vaulted ceiling and only one feature. In the middle of the room was a stone plinth, on which was what looked like a solid block of crystal encasing a sword. Around the block of crystal was a sphere of shimmering light, the same gold, silver, and blue produced by Jason's transcendent damage powers. The sword in the block was elaborately crafted into a sinister form. The blade was some kind of black metal, engraved with glowing red runes down its length. The hilt was constructed of some manner of red crystal and black stone, like ruby and onyx. The grip had sharp thorns. Anyone who grasped it would be stabbing their own hand.
It kind of looks like Jason's dagger, Neil said.
Jason conjured his dagger into his hand, holding up for the group to compare. Jason's dagger was likewise an ornate object of black obsidian and red crystal.
You're not wrong, Jason said. It has to be a coincidence, though, right? I mean, if you're making a sweet-looking red and black bladed weapon, they're all going to end up with a certain level of similarity.
Do those runes on the blade mean anything?
Sophie asked. Jason and Clive both had translation powers, so they looked closer.
They don't say anything coherent, Jason said. They just represent various concepts?
Not ideal concepts either, Clive added. Soul, power, hunger, life, feast.
That does sound pretty bad, Neil said. As in, Jason's powers bad?
Hey!
I'm more interested in that energy around it, Clive said. It seems very strange to both aura and magical senses.
It looks like Jason's dissolved people into nothing powers, Sophie said. I'm not going near it.
Agreed, Neil said. Jason turned his attention to the shimmering light, slowly moving closer.
Be careful, Humphrey warned,
but Jason instead extended a hand towards the light.
Jason, you should give me time to examine that before doing anything rash, Clive said.
Jason ignored them. He felt something familiar about the energy. As his fingertips came in contact with it, a bolt of sensation rocketed through his body and he yanked his arm back, like it had been shocked. He stumbled back a couple of steps before righting himself.
It's a soul,
Jason said, his voice haunted.
This light is a disembodied soul, somehow held here. Are you sure?
Clive asked.
Completely.
Clive scratched his head as he looked at the light in confusion.
That shouldn't even be possible.
I'm increasingly convinced that impossible isn't a thing, Jason said.
So someone has turned an actual living soul into a box?
Humphrey asked.
Isn't that a lot to keep people away from a sword?
It isn't trying to keep things out, Jason said. It's trying to keep something in.
Are you sure?
Clive said.
Even with enhanced aura sensors, it's like there's something obscuring it.
You can touch it if you like, Jason said. I wouldn't advise it, though. It's much higher rank than we are, at least gold, and possibly even diamond. Just coming into contact with it had quite the spiritual kick. But its purpose was immediately clear. Everything it is has been directed to a singular intent, keeping this sword exactly where it is.
I'm going to touch it,
Clive said. Just be warned, Jason said. It's going to kick you right in the soul.
Maybe you shouldn't, Humphrey suggested. I have to,
Clive said.
Call it a spirit of inquiry. I'd rather go through whatever punch back it will give me than live my life knowing I had the chance to experience something so rare and unique, but didn't have the courage.
Clive reached out his hand, and after a brief moment of hesitation, touched the light. The breath shot out of him, and he toppled like a tree, falling to the ground, unconscious. Neil quickly dropped to one knee to examine him.
He's fine, Neil quickly said.
He just had a jolt to the system, causing some soul-body dysphoria. Best to let it settle than try and forcibly wake him up.
That soul-body thing sounds bad, Sophie said.
On a regular person it would be, Neil said as he pulled a pillow from his dimensional satchel and placed it under Clive's head. For an essence user, it's kind of like holding your breath for too long and passing out. He's going to wake up with a fierce headache, but nothing more than that. The team gathered around Clive, looking down at him with concern.
Really, he'll be fine, Neil said. It won't take him long to wake up.
All right, Belinda said. I guess we decide what to do about this sword while we wait.
We don't do anything, Jason said. Someone or something went to considerable effort to contain it here. All that stuff we fought in the cell block was little more than a no trespassing sign compared to the power involved with this. If someone went to the trouble of doing this to a person's soul just to keep this thing locked up, I don't think letting it loose is a good idea, even assuming we can figure out how.
So, after all the fighting we did to get here, you just want to walk away?
Belinda asked. Yes, Jason said. That's exactly what I want to do.
I'm willing to take Jason's advice on that, Humphrey said.
Sophie? Neil? Oh, I was happy to leave it there when I saw the fact that the handle stabs you, Neil said. That tells you all you need to know about the kind of weapon it is.
It's not as if we're even looking for a sword, Sophie said. You conjure yours, Humphrey, and you're not giving up the one Gary made, right, Asano?
Exactly right, Jason said.
That just leaves you, Lindy, Sophie said. It might not hurt to have some good equipment for your turn into a warrior power.
No, thanks, Belinda said. I'll stick with weapons that only stab the other guy.
Clive groaned loudly as he gained consciousness. He groggily sat up, gripped his head in his hands, and let out another coughing groan. Neil dropped back down to examine him. How do you feel? Neil asked.
Like someone dropped a sailing ship on me, Clive said, looking past Neil to Jason. How did you avoid that thing hitting your soul like a hammer?
Clive asked. I didn't, Jason said. I did warn you.
I wish I had your resilience of soul, Clive said.
No, Jason said flatly. You don't. We've decided to leave the sword where it is, Humphrey said to Clive, unless you're looking to reopen the debate.
No,
Clive said, shaking his head and then wincing at the pain it brought.
I felt that soul, what it went through to put that thing there and keep it there. I'm not even sure we could get that sword out, but I am very sure that we shouldn't.
Neil and Jason were meditating outside where the cloud house had been set up. They were both anticipating an ascension to bronze rank after the battle in the cell block and didn't want to make a mess inside. The cloud house would be able to clear it up, but doing so would just accelerate the rate at which it would consume the supply of crystal wash Jason had fed into it. It had been a huge amount and should be sufficient for years, but there was no point accelerating the consumption when it wasn't necessary. Neil's summoning power was his last remaining iron rank ability. The golem had fought like a champion in their most recent conflict, so no one was surprised when Neil crossed the threshold into bronze. He wandered out from the secluded bit of ruin where he had finished his advancement. He had washed himself down with a bottle of crystal wash after purging all the muck from his body in the transition. He had stripped down to his underwear so his waiting teammates could see that his blocky weightlifter physique had changed to one of more sleek yet still built up muscle. It had also made his hair fall out and his fingernails grow strangely long. Jason helped remedy those minor issues with grooming scissors and some of Jory's hair growth cream. Jason's change did not come that day, but Humphrey designated a day for rest. It was something they had done around once a week, taking a break from the otherwise unrelenting schedule of training and combat. They had killed more monsters than it was worth bothering to count, although they had been counting the flesh abominations. They had found and destroyed 41 of the abominations thus far, which Shade's numbers put at around a tenth of the city's total. Shade's familiar power advanced ahead of Gordon's, the shadow, Jason's most constant companion. Jason had come to rely on his shadowy presence, available even when an apocalypse monster or an interdimensional reality assassin were socially inappropriate. All Dark Essence abilities have reached Bronze, 0. Linked attribute, Speed, has increased from Iron, 9, to Bronze, 0. Jason's power attribute had reached Bronze over the course of their time in the astral space, taking his strength officially beyond what any normal human was capable of. It was the transition of his Speed attribute that really made him feel like he had truly transformed, however. It affected not just his ability to run fast, but his reflexes, agility, dexterity, and proprioception. His newly ascended speed attribute also combined with his power attribute to make him capable of incredible feats. When he really should have gone back to meditation, his team found him doing somersaults on the spot and climbing up ruins by jumping from wall to wall.
I feel like a video game character.
No one knows what that means, Sophie said.
You've been able to move like this for as long as I've known you, Jason told her. How are you not constantly running around and giggling like an idiot?
You should have seen her when she was younger, Belinda confided, getting a glare from Sophie.
Jason finally settled down and resumed his meditation, after which it did not take long before Gordon's power also crossed the line. All Doom Essence abilities have reached Bronze 0. Linked attribute Spirit has increased from Iron 9 to Bronze 0. Progress to Bronze rank 100%. 4 of 4 essences complete. All your attributes have reached Bronze rank. You have reached Bronze rank. You have gained resistance to Iron rank and lower damage sources and effects. The potency of your aura has increased. Your aura senses have improved. Progress to Silver rank, 00%.
Jason's transition from Iron to Bronze rank was much less violent than that from Normal to Iron. That time, his newly created body had been composed of what Clive called trash magic, while his Iron rank 1 was closer to an ideal state for his rank. It still purged a large quantity of black, stinking biomass, however, that he washed off with crystal wash. He trimmed his suddenly grown nails and regrew his hair with the cream, leaving his beard to grow back on its own. Humphrey and Clive had both grown beards during their time in the astral space, as they had also lost them during their rank-ups. Neil, being an elf, had never grown more than a light scruff that Jason found enviably appealing. Jason really did feel transformed. He was a new man, and he felt it. Just moving around in his bronze rank body felt different. His spirit attribute reaching bronze also had a big impact, as it increased not just the sixth sense that detected auras, but took his other five senses beyond the bounds of human potential. The world was suddenly alive with a nuance of color like nothing he had experienced. He could pick out scents like he was cataloging them, and his hearing could pick out the world around him almost as well as his vision. He could feel the air on his skin, taste it on his tongue. It was as if the world had transformed with him.
"Good, right?" Humphrey asked with a smile, as he found Jason looking into the distance with a goofy grin.
"Oh, yeah.
We can handle monsters of equivalent or higher rank than us in large numbers now," Humphrey said. "Remember those teams we saw at the Mirage Arena in Jayapura? We can stand shoulder to shoulder with any of them now."
"Some people might think that means we can relax a little," Jason asked. "Something tells me that you think it means we have to train even harder."
"I can confidently say that we're at an elite level for our rank," Humphrey said. "That's not such a big deal at Iron rank, though. If we're going to say the same at Bronze and Silver, we need to start the work now." "You know, Humphrey, the parents of every girlfriend you ever have are going to love you."
"What do they think of you?" Humphrey asked.
"I haven't gotten that far too many times," Jason said. "There was my first girlfriend, whose parents liked my brother more, which worked out in the end. Everyone between her and Cassandra was more casual. Thalia Mercer liked me. Her husband, not so much, I think. The thing with Thadwick, you know?"
"I was always uneasy about Gabrielle's parents," Humphrey said. "Religious is good, but some people take it to a point that it gets a little unnerving."
"Putting aside the religious being good thing, I know what you mean," Jason said. "You get those really religious people with that weird intensity, you know?"
"Oh, yeah," Humphrey said. "I mean, the Goddess of Knowledge. It should be a fairly relaxed group, right? They kept asking me what I was reading. They did not like hearing that I didn't have a lot of time to read with all the training. Speaking of which, we will be getting back to it. A few days to let you and Neil get a feel for your new power level. Then we'll go after the Blood Weaver and see what we can find from what's left of the cultists."
"All right," Jason said. "I have some stuff to do before that, though. Growth items, familiar summoning, basically a bunch of rituals. Neil has his growth items too."
"We can take tomorrow," Humphrey said. "After that, though, it's back to work."
Chapter 46. Anyone can be useful.
"I actually got the materials pretty cheap," Jason said. "Gary made it from local materials in the first place, so I just needed higher-grade versions of the same stuff." Jason had drawn out the diagram for the Ritual of Ascension that would have his